Welcome to the podcast of Motorweek, television's original automotive magazine. Here's your Motorweek podcast host, John Davis.
Thanks for joining us at Motorweek. I am John Davis, and this is our podcast number 49. Joining me in Studio C, our road test producer and two-wheeler reporter, Brian Robinson.
Hello, John.
And our associate producer, Ben Davis.
Hello.
Okay, we're going to be wrapping up the Chicago Auto Show and our trip south to Roebling Road Raceway in Georgia, where we do our winter testing. But since this is the first time we've gotten together since the Chicago Auto Show, we're going to start with something we have done every one of the last 29 years, and that is announce our Motorweek Driver's Choice Awards. Now, let me set this up. If you're not familiar with our awards, we pick a vehicle as the best of, and this year, 13 different categories, all the way from small car to best pickup truck to best dream machine. And then we turn around and pick from that group a best of the year. With that said, let's talk about a few of the awards that I think are kind of fit the times we're in right now. Fuel prices going up. Everybody wants to know about best small car. And we picked one, and there were a lot of very good ones to choose from. The Volkswagen Jetta. What did that car do for you?
I think the biggest reason we picked it as best small car is because it didn't feel or act like a small car. It felt more like a midsize car, but at the small car price.
How about you, Ben?
I agree with that. Plenty of room inside, and it doesn't lose the sporty, fun-to-drive quality that, for us, is really important.
Yeah, I mean, we looked back at our awards and said they're Driver's Choice Awards, so that means cars we like to drive. And the Jetta, the new Jetta, is built in Mexico, and it's larger, it's more Americanized, and a lot of people think they've cheapened it up by doing things like taking the suspension back to a solid axle. But on the other hand, it felt great. It felt remarkably good, and it is well-priced. A category that's always important, one of the biggest car segments, best family car. And our winner there was the Hyundai Sonata. Why?
You just can't deny that Hyundai is on their game these days. And the Sonata, the styling, blows me away from everything else in that category of vehicles, as well as sister company Kia, the Optima. Unbelievable as well. It's To have a great selling car these days, you need that kind of bold styling that everybody else doesn't seem to be bringing as hard as them.
Styling was obviously a big part of it, but then, you know, price was even bigger part of it.
I agree with that. I mean, when you can go out and lease a new Sonata for $200 a month, which I've never been clear on why they're making it so inexpensive, and you get a car that's basically done. You don't have to do anything. Don't have to add anything else. That's pretty remarkable. And it's really the way of the future. A large, mid-sized, five-passenger car with four-cylinder power and fuel economy on the highway that every time I've taken it out on a trip, I'm well over 30 miles per gallon, which is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. In the performance area, we have a number of categories, but let's hone in on best performance car, Ford Mustang GT. Certainly not the first time that Mustangs won this category, but why this time?
You can't bet against the Mustang, especially the new 5-liter engine. That was a big part of it, but just like the Corvette, just the performance you get for the money, there's really nothing out there that can top it.
Ben, want to add anything?
I'll take that a step further. The Mustang is so, not only is it a great car, but you would be surprised how well it does against vehicles you wouldn't think it could beat on in a track situation, such as a WRX, STI, vehicle such as that. Mm-hmm. Being only rear-wheel drive, it'll outperform a lot of all-wheel drive cars on the track.
An area that caused a little bit of stir when we picked it was best large utility. Here we picked two newcomers, the Dodge Durango and the Jeep Grand Cherokee. Now, we picked two of them because they do share the same chassis, and the Grand Cherokee is a five-passenger vehicle, and the Durango is a little longer, and it's seven-passenger. But what makes these large utilities sort of stand out?
Well, they're large and capable. And
still capable.
Right. The Explorer kind of did the same thing. It got bigger and it lost its frame. But all along with it, it lost a lot of its capability, whereas the Durango and the Grand Cherokee, you can still tow a lot with them. And
you can still get a V8.
Low range, yeah. V8, four-wheel drive.
You can still get a V8 for sure. And towing went down on Explorer. Towing's still around 7,500 pounds on Durango. And,
yeah, I mean, it really was between Explorer and Durango and Jeep. And the Explorer has taken a very much more V6 I won't say crossover type stance because they're still calling it an SUV.
Well, I call it a crossover.
It is. And Durango and Grand Cherokee are staying much truer to their SUV roots, go anywhere, and yet
tow anything,
and yet they're very, very modern. Best pickup truck. We did something unusual by picking the entire Ford F-Series lineup because they have both a half ton, they've got sport trucks, and they've got the heavy duty all rolled up into one.
And because we could.
And
it was well-deserved on top of that.
Yeah, they're a terrific lineup of trucks.
They got everything from the Raptor to, you know, the new heavy duty with an 800 torque
pound feet of torque.
Yeah, it's they got a lot.
In the new, car business much?
No. New, new 5-liter coming out, which we just had in. And then EcoBoost V6 coming. They got a ton of stuff coming out.
It's an impressive truck line.
Absolutely. Brian and I, we talk a lot about first cars we'd buy if we won the lotto. And Brian, he's my witness. Every time we talk about it, I say Raptor. first thing I would buy.
That's your dream machine? That seems like a
good... So first, I would buy that so I could drive around and buy my other dream machines and properties. That's my main vehicle there.
That's a good intro into it. Let's look at our dream machines. This is like kind of our no-holds-barred category where if you won the lottery, if you found the next Xerox, whatever. And we picked, we usually pick more than one, usually two or three. This year, they're all convertibles, the Alfa Romeo 8C Spider, the Audi R8 Spider, and the Bentley Continental Super Sports Convertible. Give us an idea of what went through your mind when you saw the lists fill up that way.
Wow. Alfa Romeo definitely was my number one pick. Just the unbridled sounds that car makes for, you know, it doesn't have all the horsepower in the world, but the sounds that engine makes are unbelievably amazing.
It's also spectacular looking.
Yeah, it is. Definitely stands out. The Audi R8 Spider is a great handling, easy to drive supercar. The Bentley, kind of over the top as far as performance and luxury both.
So. Yeah, fastest Bentley convertible they've ever built.
That
in their
particular
life.
One that we had was beautiful color combination too, with the black wheels and the red paint, red interior.
Now, I'm probably giving it away if you haven't looked at our website, but our best eco-friendly car, which is the Chevrolet Volt, also ended up being our best of the year choice. And this is a milestone automobile. It's certainly not perfect. It's gotten some recent criticism as not making financial sense. But then, of course, I don't think any of the newer electrified cars really do. But give me your impressions. You both had a chance to spend some time with the Volt. What did you like about it? What didn't you like about it?
I like the fact that for an American car, the interior design was much more than I was expecting to jump into. Even the car has an initial high price. You pay a lot for any kind of entry-level technology. I mean, just look at microwaves and VCRs.
Yeah.
But for that money, they really did as a superior job in giving you quality fit and finish inside and a lot of value for the money, in my opinion.
Yeah, like you said, it's definitely a significant, very significant vehicle. You know, whether you agree with whether it should be all electrics or better, or whether it really gets the range it should, and you know, all the technology into it, if it's really that great. But you can't deny it's a very important vehicle.
Biggest thing I like is, of course, you don't have to worry about range anxiety and the fact the car drives normally. I mean, it is a revolutionary piece of work. And, okay, cold days, maybe you don't get but 25, 26 miles on the batteries. Warm days, 45, 50. You know, that's still pretty remarkable when you figure you can go months on a tank of gas. And I just met a guy this week who drives one to work every day, and he lives 15 miles from work. So on the coldest days of the year, he was basically not running out of juice until he was a mile from home. So he was getting 29 miles.
That's great.
And he was spending about $1.50 in electricity a day to charge it up. And good for him, his employer was actually letting him charge it during the day at the employer's expense. But that replaced a vehicle that he was spending $10 a day. driving back and forth. So he was pretty darn happy.
I drove it on a cold, rainy day in Michigan, and I drove it hard, too. I wasn't trying to save any kind of energy at all. I've still got 36 miles out of my electric range.
Yeah, that's pretty significant. Okay, let's move on quickly to some of our favorites that we had a chance to spend time with down in Georgia at Roebling Road Raceway, which is a two-mile road course near Savannah that we use for our winter testing venue every year. And it was miserable weather this year. It was windy. I think one day we had a 50-mile-an-hour wind right down the track. It wasn't that cold, but it sure made it feel cold, and it was fairly damp. So generally speaking, it was certainly not your idea of going south for warmer weather, but we still managed to get our testing in. Genesis R-Spec Coupe, or the Genesis Coupe R-Spec. This is the new V6 R-Spec Coupe. Give me your impressions.
Yeah, let's see. They had a 2.0 R-Spec before. Right. Now this is the 3.8 R-Spec. And it's a fun little car. Surprisingly capable on that big track. And it has more of a Mustang / Camaro muscle car feel almost to it. Almost like the, if you want to compare it to a Mustang, the GT suspension with the V6 power. It did really good. Lightweight, nimble, good feeling on the track.
Yeah, hopefully it spawns a much bigger generation of V6 rear-wheel drive imports because it's been a long time.
First time we've ever taken a Korean car to a racetrack. And, you know, run it all day, didn't tire it out, car maintained its composure. It was a very impressive piece of work.
It was fine. The engine's not super torquey, no. So, you know, acceleration's not as good as some of its competition, and the clutch was really soft, and still some things like that. It
had some
be
rough
improved
edges.
Upon. Yeah. But overall, yeah, very impressed.
Now, we normally don't take convertibles to a racetrack for obvious reasons. Most convertibles without their roof are just not as stiff as the coupe. But when we were offered an Audi R8 Spider, one of the cars we just mentioned as our best dream machine, we didn't say no. And I think we were glad we didn't say no. It turned out to be a pretty good track performer.
Yeah, no doubt. The R8, as far as supercars go, is definitely the easiest to drive. I mean, it feels like you're in a sedan out there just kind of tooling along. And, you know, you're at triple-digit speeds, and the thing's just carving corners up like crazy. And we had the manual V10, which obviously the V10 puts out a lot of power. And the manual with like the gated shifter is also much better than their R-Tronic. Sequential manual.
Ben?
I didn't have a lot of chance to drive it on the track, but my input from just driving it around town was that not only is it a great supercar, but I mean it's also a great around town car. You don't have to drive it fast or put the RPMs up or anything like that to make it run right just grabbing the groceries.
I didn't really see much difference in how it felt on the track between the R8 Coupe and the R8 Spider. I thought they did an amazing job of keeping it stiff.
And the styling is actually pretty, you know, from a distance, they don't look that different. But up close, there's a lot of differences as far as the side and the way they handle the whole rear hatch, obviously, with the top being there. It doesn't have the glass hatch. You can see the engine through like the Coupe, which is kind of unfortunate.
But. Yeah, it is, because that's really one of the cool things about it. For people that walk by.
If I had to pick one thing that was disappointing about it, is still the interior. I mean, although it's extremely comfortable and the quality is good, it's just nothing really special about it for a supercar. You could be in an A4 or an A6. I mean, there's
a little
nothing
too that, much normal Audi in it. Yeah. The Lamborghini Gallardo Superleggera, a real, true, honest-to-God supercar. Lamborghini Gallardo Superleggera.
Nice.
That's close, about as close as I'm going to get today. And actually, it shares a lot of kinship with the Audi R8. What were your impressions? Was it more of a car than you expected, less of a car, what?
Well, Lambos, of all the cars we get in here, are pretty rare. I mean, you get Rolls-Royce and Bentleys and Ferraris, and to this point, I've never driven one where I was hugely impressed with it. I mean, they're okay, but, you know, compared to Ferraris and other stuff like that, they just never did it for me. But this car, as you say, it's based on the R8 Spider, similar chassis and everything, but this car was just insane on the track. It was super lightweight. I guess that's the Leggera. They took a lot of weight out of it.
Took weight out.
Everything inside is all carbon fiber, and you're in a racing seat. And it's kind of intimidating when you get in. You're not really sure what to expect. But after a couple laps, it's similar to the R8. It's just you start to feel at home in the thing, and you start pushing it more and more, and the sound is just awesome.
What was it like wearing a helmet in there? Because I know just sitting in that, my neck was crunched down into my chest.
I didn't really notice anything. I mean, wow.
he was too involved with driving.
I had zero headroom.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've driven a lot of Lambos over the years, and I've always felt they were fairly crude, and they've gotten obviously better in the last 10, 15 years. But this car was as easy to drive as any supercar that I can remember. And that seemed to be the biggest difference for me. It no longer felt like you were wrestling a bull around the track. Very impressive machine. Okay, we're going to move on to our lightning round, where I asked the guys here to have give their opinions on a topic, something in the headlines. We've got 2 minutes, and when that bell is rung by Michelle, that means our time is up. I'm going to paraphrase our subject today. There's a lot of new smartphone apps out there that are interacting with cars. GM's got a new one called it's the OnStar MyLink, and Ford, of course, has got all their sync situation with and they've got apps that are on fit most of their cars now. And it basically, we're going to be seeing more and more in the next few years people able to monitor their cars through apps on their smartphones and use their smartphones in the car as their main source of communication. Okay, is this a good thing that we're having all of this integration between smartphones and our cars, or a bad thing? What do you think?
Well, I'm probably the wrong guy to ask. I'm the most anti-technology guy I know. I didn't even get a cell phone, much less a smartphone, until just recently. But I think the communication from the car to you via the apps and stuff, you'd be able to monitor your car. I think that stuff's cool. And obviously, you need to be able to talk on your phone without actually touching your phone in the car. But as far as, you know, there's some of these things have like 20,000 voice commands. You know, you can tell the rear window to go up or down, or, you know, climate control. I don't see much use for that kind of stuff. But, you know, basic phone use and stuff like that certainly is necessary these days.
Ben, you're a little more tech savvy.
Yeah, I can definitely see where radio controls, voice activated, would be beneficial. It's a no-brainer on the smartphone communication as far as fielding calls and dialing calls from behind the wheel, because it breaks down to your personal capabilities of doing two things at once. A lot of people are great at it, and there's a lot of people out there on the road that can barely breathe and drive at the same time. So the more help they have, the better, because it seems like every time I look up from a red light, the whole world's on their phone driving.
They are.
Yeah, there's so many people sitting at red lights just doing stuff on their phone now. People are honking horns like crazy. And
I guess that's the part that just bothers me. We keep giving we're giving the consumers what they say they want, which is more control over their cars through their smartphones, and we're just adding to the distracted driving problem. Yeah. So I know the Europeans are very anti this, and I always thought they were kind of behind the times. But it seems to me we've gotten to a point in this country where it's okay to do anything you want behind the wheel except pay attention.
Yeah.
So it kind of bothers me that we're heading in that direction. I guess we didn't quite use up our 2 minutes. Oh, there we go. We just did. Thank you. Thanks, Michelle. All right. Now on to our Motor Week mailbag. Jamie writes, I've been watching your show and see some good green things and ideas, and I've got a question on electric vehicles. Why can't we come up with a way for wind, as there are cars moving through the air, to run a type of generator or alternator to keep the cars charged? We're talking about electric cars here, rather than having to plug them in to recharge them. What do you think an answer might be for that?
That's way above my pay grade, but if he does come up with something, I'm happy to share and say that he heard it here first. But
happy to take credit for it.
There's probably enough hot air in our office to power some cars for a while. I don't know. I just think that's...
My guess is it's probably just not efficient enough yet, but is nothing. I mean, the idea, you have to take into effect how much drag there is on, you know, the whatever's revolving, the fan and all that, but probably it's a good idea. It just maybe isn't quite there yet.
Also makes me wonder if there's something that you could do with a turbo-like technology where your exhaust spins an impeller and in turn spins a generator.
That's a good one, too.
It's a great idea. Just the money and time to develop that. I'm not sure that it would pay off. I mean,
I suspect they would. Some engineer might say, "Well, you'd have to add a 20-pound motor or something, you know, to be able to generate enough power to be meaningful, and that's weight and wind resistance." But still, I would imagine as we move forward, and people, car makers that are doing all electric cars that are looking for ways to extend the range of those cars, they might be looking into all sorts of things.
Sure.
Hey, what about fairy dust? Do you think that's ever going to become practical?
If it is, can you let me know what stock exchange I can buy it on? And that might be and will be our next Xerox. All right. I want to thank everybody that's in the studio today. That brings to a close to our Motor Week podcast number 49. Thanks to Brian Robinson and to Ben Davis. Thanks to our audio engineer, Jim Bigwood, and our podcast creator, Bob Mixter, and also to our ever-present producer, Michelle Parker, the lady with the bell. I'm John Davis. Thanks for listening to our podcast, and I hope you'll catch Motor Week on your local public television station and also on Discovery's HD Theater on Tuesday evenings. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you soon.
You have been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at motorweek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive magazine series, each week on your local PBS station.